It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of. And there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts. Like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube. I have a few introductory stuff out of the way, so if you just want to skip, if you don't care about that, and you just want to start where the recap starts, there are timestamps in the description. If you're watching this on YouTube, YouTube creates like little chapters based off of the timestamp, so feel free to hop around. I said in my last episode that my next episode, this episode, would be about I Love LA episodes 7 and 8, like wrapping up my I Love LA coverage. And I had intended to do that, but honestly, I kept ending up like not recording when I wanted to record. And I really want to be somewhat timely with my Percy Jackson coverage because that's airing in real time. And I Love LA is already late anyway. So I'm trying to get this episode out before the next Percy Jackson episode drops, which I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do that because, full transparency, I'm recording this at 9 p.m. PST on Tuesday. So the episode drops in 3 hours. So like by the time I finish recording this and editing it, it'll probably come out right when the new episode comes out, but I'm still going to try to get this episode out before Wednesday. Anyways, all that being said, I care more about my Percy Jackson coverage being timely than wrapping my I Love LA coverage right away. So I'm going to try to get this episode out by Wednesday and then try, maybe my weekend is Thursday, Friday. I have a weird weekend. So I'm going to try to get the I Love LA episode done sometime in my weekend and then get the next Percy Jackson episode out early next week before episode 7 drops. We'll see. We'll see how that goes, but I care more about getting my Percy Jackson coverage in a timely manner and like not falling behind on that and then having to do episodes 5 and 6 together. Like I care more about this than I do about wrapping up the I Love LA coverage, to be quite honest. So that's what I'm doing, but apologies for all that. I had genuinely intended to record the I Love LA episode a few days ago. But if you don't know me, I am Ben as well. And so it's been a rough few days in the news. I also design newspapers for a living, so I just can't catch a break. Like, imagine big news, world-changing news hits and you have to clock into work. Imagine you have to clock into work and your work is about that news. Like, I'm genuinely tired every single day. Anyways, so that's my little update right now. I really can't catch a break. I was thinking about this recently, because this is the second year in a row where something really big happens right at the beginning of the year that prompts somebody to reach out to me, like people who don't reach out to me very often. And I realized it because I was having a conversation with somebody who, like, their last text message to me was asking me, or maybe not their last, but one of their last text messages to me was checking in last January, asking me if I'm safe from the fires in LA. And then this January, they reached out to me asking about the situation in Venezuela. So it's just funny. It's just, I'm like, every year starts with something. But anyways, I feel like every episode I'm like, so guys, here's another reason that I kind of have been flopping as a podcaster. But you know what? That's okay. Nobody listens to these anyway. And like 10 people that do, Shout out to you. Anyways, sorry for the long-winded introduction. I will be wrapping up my I Love LA coverage, okay? Like, I have not abandoned that show. I have notes on the episodes. I just have a job. This is a hobby. On that note, before I jump into Percy Jackson, if you've started watching, this is the third video. My cat Ernest is in the frame. This is the third video podcast that I've done. And if you've started watching these on YouTube and you're like, Emmy, the video quality sucks, I don't make any money from this, okay? I'm using a free online platform editing thingy. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry that the quality sucks. Please share with a friend, like and subscribe, get my views up so I can make money from this and buy a proper camera. Sorry. You don't obviously don't have to do that if you're not enjoying the content. I'm just saying, if you're ever like, Emmy's quality is not that good, Emmy's like not super up to date, Emmy's falling behind, this is a hobby. I make zero money from this. I've been doing it almost for 4 years completely for the love of the game. So, and I'm trying to improve. That's why I'm doing the video podcast. If I ever make money from this podcast, I'm just going to invest it straight back into the podcast to get my quality up. But right now this is the quality I have, and this is the quality that I'm going to have to live with. So my apologies. But thank you so much for tuning in. Apologies again for the long-winded intro. And this is episode 5 of Percy Jackson and the Olympians season 2. It's called We Check Into CC's Spa and Resort. So last we left off, their boat exploded. So it opens on like a foggy room, and we hear echoes of Clarice's voice, the men of the ship that went down yelling, and then Percy wakes up in this foggy room. He goes to open a door, and Annabeth stops him, and he's like so relieved to see her. She tells him not to go out there. She hasn't had time to make a full scout of how things are, and he's just so relieved she's alive. I love them. He asks where they are and she doesn't know. She's like, you tell me. I woke up 15 minutes ago. I don't know if we're on land, if we're on another big ship. I don't know where we are, right? And Percy knows where he is a lot of the time with the coordinates, right? Okay, we established that last episode. Somebody comes in. She says she's glad to see them awake, and they pull out their weapons because they're like, are you going to kill us? They don't say that verbatim, but that's the general, like, why else are they threatening her? Anyway, her name is Hilla. She's their concierge. And fun little Percy Jackson world thing. There is a character we meet in the Heroes of Olympus series called Reyna. And this is her sister. Will they recast her? I don't know if that ever happens. But like, when we meet her, she's like, oh, you met my sister at this. I think Reyna is supposed, if I'm remembering correctly, I think Reyna lives here as well with Hilla. Maybe I'm misremembering. We don't meet her in this book, but later it's established that like, oh, when you were there, I was there, I think. If I'm remembering correctly, I don't remember. Anyways, she apologizes, sees that they need more time because they pulled out weapons to threaten her. And she introduces herself. She's Hilla, their concierge. She'll be right outside with cucumber water whenever they're ready. And Percy asks, before she like steps outside, he asks Hilla where Tyson is. And Annabeth's like, and Clarice and of our crew. And Hilla explains that a fisherman found Annabeth and Percy on like a raft by themselves. She's afraid that they're the only survivors. Then she leaves. She tells them to take all the time they need. And Percy is very upset about this. He's very upset. He's relieved Annabeth's alive, clearly, but he's like, I've failed Tyson. Tyson's gone. Like he's very distraught about this news that Tyson is gone. He says that he promised his mom he'd take care of Tyson, and Annabeth says he might still be alive. He survived a bomb. Like he's bulletproof, not bulletproof. He's fireproof, and he's a son of Poseidon. Like he might still be alive. He might still be alive. So Clarice. And she's right. Like, if you, I survived the explosion, they could have survived the explosion too. Like, I understand the defeat. Also, Tyson, of all people, I feel like of all of you, is the most likely to survive. I don't know. And how do Cyclops die in this world? I mean, I imagine with, like, celestial bronze, but it's, like, they're fireproof. His dad is Poseidon, so, like, Poseidon would keep him safe if he, like, went into the ocean. I don't think he'd drown. So, like, I understand. Percy's a kid. I have the hindsight of knowing how this show ends. not the show, because the show hasn't happened, but like generally I imagine it's going the same direction as the book, which I did read. So like I have, you know, the knowledge to know, like, please calm down, Tyson's not God. Or maybe he is, if you don't know. No comment. But like I understand the defeat he feels, right? Percy says they lost everything. It's so sad. It's so sad. He's so defeated. And it's really, you can tell that the whole point of this episode is really about like their fatal flaws. That's the big thesis of this episode, is like Percy and Annabeth need to overcome their fatal flaw. They each have their own, right? And I think this was a nice little, I mean, we've been introduced to Percy's fatal flaw like throughout the entire world building of his character. But I think even in this episode, this is such a smart way to begin to get introduced to Percy and his fatal flaw, and like what makes him long to be magnificently cursed. That song is so Percy Jackson goated. Sorry. Percy is clearly upset, and Annabeth tells him to stay here. She's going to scout ahead. She goes, but he calls after her and follows very soon after. It's not like she's by herself very, very long. She opens the door. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. And they're like, where are we? Hilla says that it's a resort and spa. She welcomes them. She says it's the only sanctuary in the Sea of Monsters, a resting place for heroes to get back on track. As she's asking, checking questions like allergies or anything, another guest named Stavros like bursts through the door and he's like, I'm ready. And he's heading back out. Hilla apologizes to Percy and Annabeth, says that this doesn't happen very often. She guesses that he's eager to head back on his quest. And Percy asks, what quest? And she's like, every guest here is on a quest. And something that I find really interesting about this resort specifically, and the fact that like later we meet another older demigod, I think there's so much in the show and in the book specifically about like demigods don't live very long. Like a lot of demigods die young. And I think it's also just very interesting, or they don't come back from their quests. And I think it's very interesting to see. We obviously see a lot of demigods die in the book series. I don't think we've had any die in the show yet that I can remember. But like, obviously a lot of demigods do die in the books because of battle and everything, monsters, etc. But there's also a very interesting alternative of like, sometimes they don't die, but they don't make it out of these quests because they stay in these like limbo-like places, like the Lotus Casino we're introduced to in the first season and in the first book, which the Lotus Casino is an important place that comes up in later books as well, of like kind of these limbo places where like demigods get stuck sometimes more than they die. And I remember one of my favorite parts of the Heroes of Olympus spinoff. Spinoff isn't the right word that I'm thinking of, but like, or maybe it is. Anyways, that series, one of the things I really, really loved about it was like, for a lot of Percy's like childhood, obviously he isn't thinking about like being an adult. And then he gets to, spoiler, if you don't care about the Heroes of Olympus, I'm going to talk about that for a little bit. So my apologies if you don't want to know what happens there. But basically the point of the Heroes of Olympus is that there's another camp and it's the Roman gods. And a very beautiful aspect about the Roman camp called Camp Jupiter is that there are a lot of adult demigods there. And it's the first time Percy really sees like a future for himself. And I think that these little moments where we get adult demigods are like so fascinating to me. I really liked that about this episode. And I don't remember if that's true to the book. I know this episode, I think, unless I'm mistaken, I think it's the most different from the books. I think that this was completely like reimagined, maybe not completely, but like it was heavily reimagined, like both this, maybe I'm wrong, but this is not how I remember it happening. And I know some parts for sure are different and I'll get to those as we go along, but this to me feels the most different. It might not be. Anyways, sorry, Stavros, I can't say his name for some reason. He's on a quest. Everybody here is on a quest, right? Then Hilla excuses herself. She says this doesn't happen very often. And the guests begin to like gather towards the windows to watch Stavros head out on his quest. Then Cece heads down the flight of stairs and Hilla introduces Percy and Annabeth, but she already knows who they are. She's like son of Poseidon, daughter of Athena. She knows who they are. She knows that they've experienced great loss. And then Annabeth begins to like speak and be like, you know, we got to get on our way. And Cece tells Hilla to write down that she's impatient. Basically, she's like writing down evaluations of them. So she's like, anytime Annabeth does anything, she's like impatient, write that down. But she doesn't think that being impatient is Annabeth's fatal flaw. She's sensing something deeper. And then she says to Percy that it's hard to see past his grief right now, but she thinks after some rest, they'll be able to figure out what's wrong with him. And he says, thank you. And it made me think of the lyric that's like, they say I'm bad news, I just say thanks. Sorry, I'm going to make so many references in this episode. I feel like this podcast is a great look into my brain because like a lot of things make me think of other things. That was such a stupid sentence. A lot of things make me think of other things. Well, duh. Anyways, Cece goes to the window. All of them are watching Star of Rose. And he is jet skiing to an island. Annabeth asks what's out there. And Cece says she can look, but it's not pretty. Then Percy looks through a telescope. Cece is explaining, while we see Stavros jet skiing to this island, that the siren's song is a deadly test, which few heroes can pass. She does what she can to help the heroes get through, but not all are patient. Okay, this is where I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe this is true in the books, but from my recollection, I feel like Cece's resort and spa and the sirens were separate chapters, separate. Like, I don't feel like it was her trying to get them better to pass the siren. If that is how it happened in the book, then please forgive me. But I feel like that's not how I remember it. So to me, this felt like the most different because I'm like, I thought that they went to Cece's resort and spa, then they got back out on the ocean, and then Annabeth and Percy tried to overcome the sirens by themselves. Like, my recollection in the book is this: the Cece's resort and spa happened, Percy gets turned into a guinea pig, yada, 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 all good to what happened in this episode. Then they're back on the sea, just Annabeth and Percy, and it's like a similar thing, but she, instead of it being like, we can't get past it, in the books, from my recollection, Annabeth says, Percy, I want to hear the siren song. So I'm going to need you to tie me and make sure that I don't go, like, cover your ears, but I need you to make sure that I don't cut, like, I tie me up because I want to be able to hear it. So he covers his ears. She listens. And before he notices, she gets away and then she swims and she goes to the sirens. It wasn't like this at all. Like, in the books, Annabeth specifically says, Percy, I want to listen to the sirens because they tell you your most, like, deepest, darkest, like, desires, and I want to know what that is. So I want to hear the sirens, but it's risky, so I'm going to, like, that's how I remember it happening in the book. So, interesting choices, but, like, I don't remember Cece being involved in the sirens. Maybe I'm incorrect. Anyways, Percy asks what they sound like. And she says that the song is different for each hero. They peer into your soul, use your fatal flaw against you to trap you into an illusion of your own making. And then while she's explaining this, we see Stavros get to the island with the sirens, walk up to them, and they eat him, basically. R.I.P. Stavros. Cece tells them that they're safe here and can stay as long as they'd like. Annabeth looks through the telescope and sees his armor and, like, his head, his helmet thing covered in blood. Percy asks what Stavros' fatal flaw was, and Cece says bravery. He thought her training was for cowards, but it takes bravery to look inward and confront your true self. That's how you sail past the sirens. And, like, please, I'm so sorry. I'm going to make a million Yellow Jackets references in this episode specifically because I could not help but, like, see adult Lottie in Cece. I was like, Simone Kessler should have played this because it reminded me so much of adult Lottie in season 2 of Yellow Jacket specifically when she's at her, like, cult thing. Genuinely, her intentional community. I'm like, this is so Lottie Matthews coded. Like, looking within, confronting, you can go deeper, Natalie. I'm sorry. This is so adult Lottie coded. Lottie is kind of like a sorceress if you think about it. I'm sorry. If you don't watch Yellow Jackets, that means nothing to you. But maybe your brain is the same kind of niche that mine is, and you understand my point. But alas, she says that looking inward and confronting your true self is how you sail past the sirens. And Annabeth's like, or you can use wax like Odysseus did. Annabeth is so funny. She's like, I don't need the self-help stuff. Like, she's like, I don't need to look inward. There's logical ways to get past this. I don't need to do self-help, okay? Cece says that they're fans of Homer And because she's like, you used wax. And Percy's like Odysseus did. And then Percy's like, oh yeah, he used the wax. And then he, you know, like Percy repeats the story because he knows it as well. And Cece says Homer has gotten more demigods killed than anybody else. It was special beeswax wax from Aristaeus's personal hive. And Percy's like, right, that guy. And Annabeth's like, he's the god of beekeeping. See, like, there has to be a god of stealth. When Luke lied to Annabeth and said this bracelet, it protects you from, like, Kalogia. I'm like, that's, you couldn't have said the goddess of cereal. Like, there's probably actually genuinely a goddess of stealth. Sorry. Cece says, when Annabeth explains that he's the god of beekeeping, he says excessive reliance on self-knowledge about Annabeth for Hilla to write down in her file. And she's like, don't worry, that's normal for an Athena kid, but we should keep an eye on it because the Sirens will use your greatest weakness against you. But if you do the work to identify, confront, and suppress your fatal flaw, you will sail past the Sirens like these six heroes. There are six statues of the heroes that have passed Cece's training and used it to sail past the Sirens. Now, I don't know, because I've never sailed past murderous Sirens. So, like, you know, whatever. But I have been in a lot of therapy and I have done a lot of self-help work. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, I feel like it's more effective to confront your flaws and then not suppress them, but find a way to express them in a healthy way. You know, like a lot of these fatal flaws that we get later with like Percy's fatal flaw and Annabeth's fatal flaw, they're not bad within themselves. They're bad when they're like extreme, you know, like I feel like you can utilize your fatal flaw, like find a way. I don't think you should suppress those things about you because fatal flaws are often like some deep characteristic that's very like intrinsic to yourself for some deep personal reason. I feel like you should learn how to utilize it. I don't think you should suppress it. I think suppressing, like, do I think there's like some things where it's like, I mean, I don't know, like if your fatal flaw is like being selfish, I don't know, but I just feel like there's a way to use your fatal flaw and like propel it for good. I don't think you need to suppress it. I think suppressing things does, I feel like you need to learn how to express things in a healthy way versus suppressing some things, you know? Even anger, like I don't feel like you should suppress your anger. I feel like you should just learn how to express your frustrations in a healthy, non-destructive way if you're like struggling with anger. I feel like suppressing anger makes it worse. I feel like suppressing your gut, like your deep desire to put others before you just makes, like, I don't, anyways, I'll get to it as I go, but it's just like, I don't think we should suppress things. I think we should like learn how to express them positively. I can do a better job teaching your course than you can, so you know, okay. Annabeth asks how long the training takes and Cece says it depends. And then Annabeth says that there has to be another way. Maybe they can sail out the other side. Like they came from the other side. Maybe they can sail out that way. And Percy and Cece in unison say the sea monsters doesn't work that way because as previously established, when Percy was like, can't we just sail around them? They just move. They would just move. The Sirens would find do one way or another. She says there's no getting around the Sirens, but she'll do her best to help them pass them. And there are no shortcuts. She's basically telling Annabeth, calm down, okay? You can't rush greatness. Then we see Clarice has washed up on shore of an island and she looks over the hill and she sees the tree with the fleece that we've previously seen. And she's like, no way, I'm on Polyphemus's island. So she starts walking towards there and she gets trapped in a net and Polyphemus is there and he grabs her. Then Grover's in the cave. He's singing to himself and sewing and Polyphemus drops Clarice off in the cave and says, we have dinner. He needs nutmeg to season her and he leaves. Then Grover asks who she is because he can't tell that it's Clarice. And he has his veil on to hide himself. So she doesn't know that's Grover either because he's wearing a wedding dress and has a veil on and she's stuck in a net. So he asks who she is. She says to get her down and he realizes that it's Clarice. So he removes his veil and asks what she's doing here. Is Percy with her? And Clarice cuts herself down. Grover's asking questions meanwhile about camp, if Percy and Annabeth are here. Clarice is trying to plan an ambush. She's like looking around the cave, gathering supplies, right? And he's like, what are you doing? I'm trying to make a weapon, plan an ambush, right? She's in war mode. And then she tells Grover that Percy is dead and so is Annabeth and nobody's coming to help. And then Grover's like, you're wrong. Percy and Annabeth are still alive. They're not on this island, but I can sense it because of the empathy link. And I think it's so beautiful that, like, he can sense that Percy's alive, so he can also sense that Annabeth's alive. Like, he can sense Percy. Like, that's so beautiful to me. Soulmate court. Anyways, so Clarice is like, great, what does that empathy link do for us? Again, she's very, like, it's really interesting because I see there are obviously a lot of reasons that Percy and Clarice don't get along. But I think it's very, very interesting in seeing, like, the way Clarice is very, like, battle-minded in a way that is similar to Annabeth, that I think is probably part of the reason that her and Percy don't really get along, because she is in a similar way to Annabeth. She explains, I don't remember if it was in this episode or episode four. I think it was episode four when she was talking to Percy on the boat. She was explaining that she can't go back if she doesn't get the fleece. Like, camp is her only home. She's been there. She, similar to Annabeth, like, is very rooted in the demigod world, right? So in these moments, we see it because Grover is, like, concerned about his friends, and she's trying to think of, like, the next step so they can win the next battle. You know what I mean? So it's, like, it's very interesting, and I can see why her and Percy butt heads, because Percy, for, like, a variety of reasons, but I think just, like, deep down in who they are as people, they're very different, because Percy is very human. Like, the human choices are all he is, he says later. Like, anyways, which I have to say that I did say something very similar in my episodes 1 and 2 recap, which then he repeated in this episode. I'm like so spot on. I say things and then they say it in the show, and I'm like, wow, I am analyzing the show well. I'm actually kind of smart. But all that to say, Grover's like, I can sense that Percy's alive. I have this empathy link. And Clarice is like, how is that going to help us? And Grover says that he finds that when things go wrong, hope can be a powerful tool. And if you watch Yellow Jackets, you already know what I'm going to say. Lottie Matthews coded. There's no such thing as false hope. There's just hope. Like, so true. And with his veil, he's kind of giving Antler Queen. And he has antlers because he's a goat. And they're in a cave, which is very Yellow Jacket season 3 coded. Anyways, everything is about Yellow Jackets to me. Everything is about Yellow Jackets to me. I can watch literally anything, any song, anything, and I can find a way to be like, that makes me think of Yellow Jackets. I'm not even kidding. Although this episode did feel very chock full with Yellow Jackets connections. So I don't think I'm delusional. I think this episode was just especially Yellow Jackets coded. Moving on, he says that he's been trapped in this cave for days, but that didn't stop him from plotting escape. But his plan needed at least one other person and a lot more rope, and he didn't have that before. All he had was hope, but now he does. Look what hope can give you. So true. He's looking up, and Clarice is like, what are you looking up at? And it's the little hole where the tree is with the fleece that she saw from the island. It's like the fleece is hanging from a tree that's right at the top of the cave, right? There's a hole, the tree's there, and then they're in this cave, right? So they're looking up and they're like, great, now we can, that's where we're going next. Back at Cece's resort and spa, Annabeth and Percy come out of their rooms and they have, like, makeovers, which they've slayed. Annabeth specifically looked gorgeous. Percy looked like he always does. No, I'm kidding. The outfit was funny, and I will say Walker did say in an interview that the scariest part of the episode was his side part. So, like, I will say that was, like, his hair. They didn't do his hair justice. He has lovely hair, and the way his hair was that episode was not his best. He still looked fine. Annabeth's hair, meanwhile, phenomenal. Anyways, she says nobody at camp has to know, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, very much like, we're not going to discuss this. Which is, it's so teenager coded. So, like, I get it. Because I too, when I was a teenager, and I would, like, if I got my hair straightened, or I got my hair, like, if I got my makeup done or something, or, like, you know, you're like, I don't, this is so not me that I don't want this to be how people associate me, you know? So I understand that feeling. They go into Cece's office, and there are a lot of animals there, parrots, guinea pigs, etc., a snake. And Cece says not to worry about the critters. They're here for emotional support. And then asks if they've ever held a chinchilla. And you know what? Thank you so much for asking, Cece. I actually have held a chinchilla fun little Emmy lore. I went to college. Not I went to college. I mean, I did go to college, but I was about to say I went to college in Brazil. I did not go to college in Brazil. I went to school in Brazil for a couple of years, and they had a chinchilla. I don't remember why. I think it was like one of the science classes. It was like they were observing the chinchilla for like behavioral reasons. I don't remember. All I remember is there was a chinchilla. And one time I did hold the chinchilla. We were not supposed to. And the chinchilla did get away from us. And then after that, they were like, you're never going to hold this chinchilla again because we can't risk the chinchilla getting out and then us losing this chinchilla. So I have held a chinchilla. Thank you so much for asking. I think of the chinchillas so often. They're so cute too. But like, anyways, hope that chinchilla is well. Don't know how long they live, but could be alive, could be not. I don't know. It really depends on the lifespan of a chinchilla because I was like 10 when this happened. So this was like 16 years ago. Moving on. Annabeth says, we're all set. We're actually in a hurry. Our friend needs them. And she says that they can't rush the process, but let's try. She gets her book. It like flies to her. And Percy's like, nice trick. And Annabeth says, that's magic, real magic. I think I finally figured out who you are. And she's like, Cersei, I wasn't really hiding it. And Percy's like, the witch. And she's like, sorceress. And then Annabeth is like, you turned Odysseus's men into pigs. And she's like, that's all behind me now. She's come so far from that anger. She's not a monster. She's not a god or a demigod. She's banished here and she makes the best of it by helping people. She does have other heroes to help. So let's go. And she gestures them to this magic mirror she has. It shows you your true reflection. Most people don't like looking at their true reflection, but if they don't determine their fatal flaw, they can't start the real work. And Annabeth asks what Cersei's fatal flaw is, and she says empathy. Cersei, empath confirmed. Like, okay, she's an empath. And you know what? She does give, like, I'm an empath vibes. If you know, you know, like people who say I'm an empath, but then really they're just like not empathetic at all. Percy steps up to the mirror. He's like, I've been through enough evaluations. And the mirror begins to like rust. I really liked this scene visually, like the way we saw the fatal flaw reflected back. Again, I don't think that this happened in the book. Like if I'm remembering correctly, in the books, Percy in the reflection sees like a better version of him instead of seeing his fatal flaw. It's like his reflection gets a makeover is my recollection. It's like he's a little bit stronger. His teeth are completely straight. He doesn't have any like imperfections. That's what he sees in the mirror, not his fatal flaw. Because I don't think that this conversation of fatal flaws in order to overcome the sirens is how it happens. I think Annabeth, if I'm remembering correctly, Annabeth is like, I want to hear the sirens because they show you your deepest secrets. This Cersei stuff is completely separate and isn't about examining your fatal flaw. Now, people might have, you know, opinions about that. I personally think that this was a smart way to combine two separate chapters and two separate stops on the Sea of Monsters. I think it was done fairly well. This was one of my favorite episodes of the series at all, let alone this season. So I was a big fan of the way that it happened in combining the two things. Like I think it was smart. And I think I'm really glad that this adaptation happened at this point in my life, because I feel like if this was adapted when I was a little bit younger, I would be a little bit more annoying and fiercely protective of the books in a way that I'm not. Not because I don't care about the books, but because I have a new appreciation. Like, I've always liked TV, but I think the older I get and in this podcast and everything, the more I truly love television as a medium. And because I love television as a medium so much, I just view them as like two separate things. Like, obviously it's inspired by it. And obviously like it's a reimagination, but like what's going to be conveyed most effectively in a book is not going to be conveyed the same on a screen. So I'm not taking it like personally when things are changed, because when they're thinking of creating a show, they're thinking of different things than when they are a book. So it's not literally going to be the book just projected onto a screen, because that's not what makes a good television show. And I think especially with the limited episodes they get, I think because of the limited episodes they get, it makes sense to be like, how can we combine these two stories that are kind of not really connected in the book the same way to convey the same thing? I think it was smart and I genuinely enjoyed this episode. Anyways, so I really like this visual. because the mirror begins to rust, and then we see Tyson, but like just like half in the rusty side of the mirror, it's like Tyson, but then the regular mirror is Percy, and then it's kind of like Percy with just Tyson's eye. Then we hear Tyson's voice asking Percy if he saved camp, Tyson's voice saying other things, then Percy telling Tyson he'll be safe. While Percy is having this experience with the mirror, a pitcher of water nearby is like, the water inside of it is like swirling into a whirlpool. Clearly, his emotional distress is being expressed in the water, right? We see scenes in the mirror of past Percy from seasons one and early this season of Percy defending Tyson. Percy, like, sacrificing himself in season one at the Midas chair turning gold, telling Annabeth that they'll be okay. Like, Percy standing up for his friends is the theme of the things that were... It ends with Tyson's voice. Then Percy steps away. And Cece says Percy's fatal flaw is very rare and very dangerous. He always puts his friends first. He asks how that's a problem. And she says that to save a friend, he might be forced to do great evil. Sacrifice a quest, sacrifice his soul, maybe even sacrifice the world. The whirlpool, meanwhile, is getting stronger. And the pitcher of water eventually breaks because it explodes. His emotions, clearly, you know. Percy storms out of the room. Annabeth goes after him, and Percy tells Annabeth that she's right. They should be afraid of him because Cece's right. Cece's right. Annabeth's like, no, Percy. And she's like, no, no, she is. I saw it. And then he says one of the best lines of the show so far. And this isn't just my opinion. This has been like turned into a million edits because it's that good. He says, Tyson is dead. Grover is lost. So if I had to choose between saving you or saving Olympus, Annabeth, I'd burn it all down. He says, just like Talia would. Talia would. I'm so sorry. I keep mispronouncing her name. Okay, really quickly, and then I'll continue. I have something I need to say about this. Okay, because I'm Percibeth Pilled just like the rest of you. Okay, I get it. That is extremely romantic. But I think it's a little, it's more than that. It's more because you guys are thinking about how you would feel as an adult or as a young adult or however old you are, a teenager. If somebody you like said this to you, right? This is like a declaration of love because it's so romantic. But if you're looking at it within the context of the show, that's obviously not what Percy means it as. Like these things that he's saying to Annabeth, he's not saying them as somebody who, like he's not saying them to somebody he has a crush on or somebody, like I think he does on some level like her. But I think Percibeth is such a special, beautiful relationship because it truly is friends to lovers. They love each other on a human, deep, personal friend level before there's any romantic interest involved because they're so focused on not dying, on, you know, like it's not even they're thinking of, you know. So you as an adult are watching this, and also you also have the knowledge and the foresight of like they are a confirmed ship. Especially if you've read the books, it's like, and you read all the way through the most recent book, it's like, you know, the Percy and Annabeth love, they fall into literally the darkest pits of hell together. Okay. So you're watching these things with that hindsight, but they're not thinking of it that way right now. They're just like, you know, so it's like, is that deeply romantic and so like amazing that he said that? Yes. But it's also like within the context, it's not this declaration of love that people are reading it as. It's him literally saying, and I'm not the first person to say this, but it's him literally being like, scared of this fatal flaw. Like he's like, she's right. Like I've lost everything at this point. If I had to choose between you or saving the world, I would choose you. I care more about my friendships than I do about saving the world. Like that is concerning to me. He's like concerned about this. He's saying this so intensely, not because it's a declaration of love to him, but because he's like, she's right. This is a bad thing. This is a bad thing. I can't be trusted. Okay. I would literally destroy the world if it came to saving my friend. So like, I understand we have the hindsight of like, this is one of the greatest love stories of all time. So because of that, all of these things obviously add to that. But in the moment, if you're looking at the context of, like, I feel like people just view Percibeth, anything they say to each other as like, with that knowledge, you're not thinking of the context of like their children who are in these very traumatic, difficult situations, who it's literally life or death for them. So he's not saying like, I love you, I would give up like the world for you in the way that you are interpreting it as a romantic, you know, thing. He's saying it as a like, literally I've lost everything. I would, my friendships matter more to me than that. And obviously it is very, very romantic. And so like, I want that too. I want a love for somebody that is so pure and innocent that it's just like, I care about you so deeply before it becomes anything romantic. I get that. I get that. I do also think that there's like something to be said about like a childhood friendship to lover relationship that probably can't be replicated the same way in adulthood. Maybe I'm not saying friends to lovers can't, but I just feel like there's something so innocent about like a childhood, like best friend that eventually becomes a romantic relationship that you can't really replicate the same way. Anyways, but like very impactful. Obviously I was gagged and I was like, oh my God, Percy and Annabeth, best relationship ever. But when you look at the whole context, he's not saying this of like, I'd burn the world down for you. He's saying like, that's scary that I'd burn the world down for you. And he's like, just like Luke said Thalia would. Now, again, I went on a rant last episode about my thoughts on Luke, but like, please do not give Luke the credit that he said that. No, Luke literally said that Thalia would rather burn down Olympus than save Annabeth. It was the opposite. Luke said if she could destroy Olympus, she would do that over saving you. Percy saying, I care more about saving you than saving the world. Luke said Thalia would destroy the world over saving you, Annabeth. So please do not compare yourself. I mean, not that Thalia would. Luke is speaking for Thalia, saying things that frankly I don't believe she would. Thalia literally decided to go to camp because she cared about Annabeth, not the other way around, which Luke was saying the other way around. Like if Thalia had the context that she could destroy the world, then she wouldn't have sacrificed herself and gone to camp. Like that's what Luke was saying. So please don't even compare. Okay. Annabeth, like if this is about the great prophecy, that's 3 years away. That's what I'm saying. I said that 2 podcast episodes ago where I was like, I'd be like, hey, we got 3 good years left in us, okay? Let's not worry about, like Chiron was so worried about, like, Percy, okay? Percy, the great prophecy. But, like, he's going to make it to 16, okay? In 3 years, he'll destroy the world. Right now, still an agent of good, okay? I'm kidding. But it's like, if it's a great prophecy, then we know he's at least going to make it to 16. Let him live these years. Do I have to? No, I'm not going to. I have the urge to repeat the prophecy every episode. I'm like, nobody cares. I mean, nobody cares, but I have it memorized. Okay, I'm going to say it one more time. Sorry. Okay. A half-blood of the eldest god shall be 16 against all odds and see the world in endless sleep. The hero soul curse laid shall reap a single choice to end his days. Olympus to preserve a race. Which, you know, in that, like, it's his days. So I don't know why he thought it was Thalia. Although, no, because prophecies aren't clear, and also, spoiler, the his days that are ended are not perceived, so, anyways. But just, like, the prophecy, the great prophecy is 3 years away, we just need to get past the sirens and save Grover now, and he's like, but you're not hearing me. What if I get there, and I have to choose between saving Grover and saving camp? Saving Grover or saving you, Annabeth? His fatal flaw is not just fatal to him. And then Annabeth tells him to stop. It's okay. And then Percy asks, what if he's more human than demigod? He's like, the human choices that you mentioned on the Ironclad, that's the name of the ship. That's all he is, the human choices. And then he says, I haven't spent enough time in your world to change that. It was never his quest. He's a danger to it. And he walks away. Now, this scene was so important for me personally. Emmy Cardinale, who wrote her thesis on Percy Jackson, because as I mentioned in a previous podcast episode, one of my main, like my main thesis argument was that disability in young adult fiction, specifically in Percy Jackson and some other books that I covered, it's like a theme I saw in all the books I covered was two worlds, right? And the way that disability kind of worked as like a bridge between them. So when he's talking about the worlds, I'm like, I am so smart. I'm not that smart, but it's just like, it does bring me a lot of joy when the two world thing is explicitly said in the show, because I'm like, I'm glad that this thing that I like latched onto and like really analyzed in the book series, I'm glad that that was like an important enough theme that it's coming up in the show, because again, they're different mediums and there's a lot to analyze and to dive into with Percy Jackson. That could be something that is like, not as much of a role, but it's been brought up repeatedly to the point where I'm like, wow, my thesis is kind of relevant. But anyways, he walks away from this. And then we're back at the cave. Clarice is trying to climb up the rope to get out of the cave. And Grover tells Clarice that Yadira is saying to hurry up. And she's like, who's Yadira? And he's like, the tree. She's holding the rope to help them. Clarice gets close to the top, but the rope falls. Then Grover rolls Clarice under like a barrel cart thing because she's unconscious and Polyphemus is coming back. And so he rolls her under that to hide her. Polyphemus comes, he asks where the demigod went, and Grover says that she cut herself down and escaped and it was horrible. And Polyphemus knows that Grover's not a cyclops. He's like, you tricked me. He yells, and then we're back at Cece's. Back at Cece's, Percy is looking at the statues of the heroes that have survived. There are six of them. And somebody, her name is Zadie, offers him some pomegranate juice. And he says he doesn't think that he should be around liquid at the moment. And then she tells him not to get discouraged, not to rush the process. And he asks her how they made it through, the six that survived. And she's like, that's more like it, because he's like, you know, given up. And he says it's not for himself, it's for his friend. Again, his fatal flaw is he can't help it. He cares too much about other people. Percy's the real empath. Anyways, he says it's not for himself. His friend needs to get past the sirens. And then Zadie's like, the room around the spa is that, or the sauna, is that you're on a quest to the island of Polyphemus. I am on a quest to find a pearl called the Tear of Aphrodite. And he's surprised that she's a demigod. And again, that's what I was kind of saying earlier, that it's interesting to see these stops along the way in these quests where it's like, maybe some of these demigods that don't make it back to camp, like some of them die, but some of them just get stuck in these like limbo places. Even like, I mean, I guess not really, because in when, because he goes to Calypso's island in the fourth book, but not really, because Calypso's whole thing is that people always leave. So like that one's not true. People don't get stuck at Calypso's island, except Calypso. Because then later in the Heroes of Olympus series, we see Calypso's island again. Like Calypso's whole thing is that suitors come and then they leave as soon as she likes them. So that one, people don't get stuck there. But you know what I mean? Like there are these limbo-esque places where it's like, sometimes it's not like you die, it's just like you get stuck somewhere forever. I think it was really interesting to meet somebody here who's a demigod and who's, and I don't remember, and maybe this was in the books, and I just don't remember it, but I don't remember there being this theme of like, everybody here is on a quest. If that did happen in the books, and but I really like this detail of like, these are people, a lot of them are demigods. Everybody here is a demigod. Everybody here went out on a quest, and a lot of them just kind of, and most of them got stuck here. Like that was very interesting to me because I don't remember that in the books. And I really like any moment we get like an introduction to an adult demigod. Like that was always really impactful for me when I was younger reading the Heroes of Olympus. That's one of the things that really I loved about that series. So I like that we're getting that early on in this series, in case maybe there's never going to be Heroes of Olympus adaptation, and that's fine. I like this. He's surprised that she's a demigod and on a quest. She says they're all demigods. They're all on quests. And then he asks how long she's been here, and she doesn't like to dwell on that because it makes you lose hope. And then she's like, I was about to lose hope, for example. And then Mei Lin made it through. That was 50 years ago. And then right when I was going to lose hope again, this other guy. And Percy realizes that Cece helps these people get through to keep the hope alive. Like he's like, oh, so every time you're about to lose hope, somebody makes it through, right? He clocks that. I love how smart they've made Percy. Like, I like that Percy is smart in the show. What can I say? Not that he was stupid in the books, but I feel like he was a lot more self-deprecating. And I like the fact that we're noticing the way Percy clocks things. Percy knocks on Cece's door and steps into her office, and he apologizes for running off earlier. And she says he doesn't have to apologize. She says, confronting our true selves, our pain, our past can be scarier than any monster. And you're telling me that Lottie Matthews would not say that. You're telling me that Lottie Matthews would not say that to her people. Also, beeswax, common theme. There are bees there. I Lottie Matthews could be Cersei. This is so Lottie Matthews coded. You can go deeper, Natalie. You need to look within. Face your pain. Face your past. Move forward. Anyways, she says she knows from experience. Who else does? Lottie Matthews. No, I'm kidding. Percy says that he knows his mom told him her story, how she helped travelers and how they leave her behind, treat her like an obstacle in their journey. And he says that for somebody whose fatal flaw is helping people, that must be hard. And she says he's a kind soul. Another theme I really like about Percy Jackson, and I've always liked this, is like, obviously it's a reimagination of the Greek myths. So it's like, there's very often like a tongue in cheek, like, yeah, I know that's what your mom told you, or like that, oh, Homer wrote that, but it's not super accurate. Like a fun little, oh, that's what the myths say, but I'm more than that. Or you know what I mean? Like, I like that attitude where she's like, oh, you've read Homer, like, you know, the stories, but you don't. It's kind of a nice acknowledgement of a, like, this is a reimagined version of the Greek myths, you know, kind of thing that I appreciate. But anyways, she says that he is a kind soul. He does. Percy's the real empath. I said that earlier. Percy says that he remembers what it was like not to have any friends. So he understands why she wants to keep people here. Again, empath. And Cece says she doesn't know what his mom told him, but she's the only one cursed to stay on the island. Everyone else can leave whenever they want. Literally something Lottie Matthews would say about her cult members. And Percy says, but most don't leave. They keep training for a program they can never pass. And she says, but some people do pass. And he thinks it's because she helps them cheat to keep the hope alive. And she says she helps heroes. That's all she does. And he says that he believes that she believes that. I loved this moment. I love this moment where she's like, I know what you're saying. I help people. And he's like, I believe that you genuinely believe you're helping people. But he has a perspective where he's able to be like, no, you're not actually you're helping yourself. You know, she really is the kind of person who would be like, I'm an empath, but then is not empathetic at all. Then Cece talks about how when she first got to the island, the solitude was brutal. But then a ship washed up on the shore and she had community. She fed them, she took care of them, and they left. Again, sorry. One of my biggest readings of Lottie Matthews as a character is that part of the reason she became a cult leader is because she was institutionalized and she like lost access to community and purpose. And like Cersei is kind of like adult Lottie, if you really think about it. She fed them, she took care of them, and then they left. And it happened again and again. She says heroes only love you as long as they need you. But where she differs from Lottie is that Lottie doesn't have this same anger of like, they shouldn't leave me, you know? Percy says he won't tell anyone her secret and she's like, oh, if I help you pass the sirens. And he's like, no, if you help Annabeth. You're not helping your case, dude. Her whole issue with you is that you're too selfless. You care too much about other people over yourself. Now you're like, I don't care about helping me help Annabeth. That's not what she wants to hear, okay? She wants you to do something self-interested. You should have said, yes, help me. And then brought Annabeth with you. I don't know. I'm kidding. He's too pure of heart. And she says she'll accept his offer to keep her secret. And then she blows magic dust and he becomes a guinea pig. Okay, we see Percy on the floor in guinea pig form and Riptide is right next to his little guinea pig body. She picks Percy up, guinea pig Percy up, and says this is a setback for her. But if the others see Annabeth get past the sirens without taking any classes, they'll all try and go to their doom. Riptide, she uses magic to get Riptide to float up and onto her desk in a little jar with a bunch of other pens. And in the cage, one of the guinea pigs says to Percy, welcome aboard, lad. The name's Edward. Settle in for good. Back in the cave, Clarice Krall wakes up from under the cart and crawls out from under it. And she calls for Grover, and then we hear his voice from inside a dresser, and she asks where the Cyclops is, and Grover says he's out looking for Clarice. He says there should be a key in the pile of junk to the side, and she asks what the point is of any of this. This is where she told her it ends, and Grover says, who, Annabeth? And Clarice is like, no, the Oracle. She says I'd fly to my final resting place, a tomb of stone. And I'm like, you didn't really fly here, though. Also, that's not what the Oracle said, okay? Fail without friends and fly home alone, okay? One, you're not home, so you haven't flown home. It said, okay, you shall something with the warriors of bone, you shall find what you seek and make it your own, but something entombed within stone, and then fail without friends and fly home alone. So you don't die entombed within stone, you fail and you fly home alone. You're not flying home yet. And you didn't really fly here. Like, I guess she flew. She's like, this is where it ends. I flew here. Like, you didn't fly here. You were, like, propelled and you landed on shore. the quest isn't over. Please. Like, that irritated me for no good reason. I'm like, that's not what the Oracle said, actually. The Oracle said you would fail without friends and fly home alone. Right now, there are people here, and you're not home. Like, she didn't say you would die in a tomb. I get it. I get it. Anyways, sorry. She says that the Oracle said she'd fly to her final resting place, a tomb of stone. It's the end she deserves. And then she's like, Father, forgive me. And Grover says that her dad cares about her and is merciful. And she's like, Ares, merciful? She opens the dresser. And Grover is there tied up with his mouth covered. So he has not been saying any of this. Polyphemus comes up behind Clarice. He was doing that thing that Cyclops do where they like sound exactly like somebody. He like picks Clarice up in a cloth thing and knocks her unconscious. And then Polyphemus speaks in Grover's voice to Grover to make it clear to the audience that that's who Clarice was hearing. And he says that he knew the whole time that Grover was not a Cyclops. He tricked him. He played the dumb beast for him. He may be half blind. Polyphemus can smell. He can hear. And he can hear Grover's dreams share, like, as Grover talks in his sleep with Percy. Because they're sharing dreams and Grover talks in his sleep. And this was a change from the books. And I'm really interested to see how Polyphemus and Percy's confrontation happens. Because in the books, Polyphemus is very much tricked by Grover and Percy. And that's a huge, like, central point in why, in like how they get away, right? Because he pretends to be nobody, and nobody is the name that Odysseus used. If it wasn't Odysseus, then maybe it was one of the heroes. I'm not good on my Greek mythology. I'm sorry. I'm not. Okay. I know Percy Jackson Greek mythology and that's it. Okay. I know some stuff, but like, I don't, anyways. So I don't remember that, to be honest. So I don't remember who, but somebody in the old tales says, I'm nobody. And that's, so Percy says, I'm nobody. And he thinks that he's returned, right? And it's like the same nobody from before, but it's not Percy. Anyways, now that in the show, Polyphemus knows that Grover knows about Percy, isn't tricked by Grover, I'm interested to see how they solve that problem. Like, I'm really, really interested to see how that will play out. Annabeth knocks on Cece's door. She's like changed back into her regular clothes. Cece's excited to see her again, but she's like, I'm actually leaving. I'm just trying to find Percy. Somebody saw him enter here. And Cece says Annabeth is free to leave whenever she wants, but without knowing what her fatal flaw is. And Annabeth interrupts and she goes, pride. It's pride. It was on her first progress report. I can't have blood. And honestly, she was kind of proud of it. That cracked me up. Annabeth said, yeah. This is what I was trying to say earlier about, like, Cece saying that you should overcome your, like, suppress your fatal flaw. It's like, Annabeth's fatal flaw is pride. Percy's fatal flaw is, like, putting other people before himself. I feel like you can learn how to use these flaws within yourself for good. It's like, being too prideful obviously is bad. But like, you can use your pride and your self-confidence. And if you learn how to rein it in, like, not, I don't think you have to learn to suppress it. You just have to learn to use it properly. Like, I hate this idea of suppressing it. It's like, what, she has to never be proud of herself? It's like, no, she can learn how to like check it without suppressing it. Like, Percy can like use, I think, you know, all of these things are good in moderation. It's just when it's too extreme. I don't know what my fatal flaw is. I think I'm stupid. So I don't know. Maybe I hate myself too much. I don't know what my fatal flaw is. I'm writing that down as something to ask my therapist. Hello, what is my fatal? No, I'm kidding. She's going to be like, I haven't seen her in a few weeks either because of the holidays. She's going to be like, what's been going on with you? Me. So what do you think my fatal flaw is? Anyways, moving on. It was on her first progress report at Camp Half-Blood. She was proud of it. And Cece says she should have known with a daughter of Athena. Always vying for her mother's attention, even when she says she's not. And then she asks Annabeth if she thinks Athena will be more disappointed if she died or if she failed. Annabeth says, well, I'm not going to die because I'm not going to fail. And then she explains her plan. She got Zadie to lend them her boat. And Zadie's going to tie Percy and Annabeth to the mast, which is how Odysseus got past the sirens without plugging his ears, which again, in the books, is how Annabeth wants to hear the sirens. In the book, it's like Percy will cover his ears. Annabeth is just tied so she can hear the sirens without going to- towards them. Cece asks who's going to steer the boat. Annabeth says she has that covered too. There's like a pulley system and it'll be cut loose with her dagger once they're past the sirens. And Cece says that's clever. She hopes it's clever enough. And then Annabeth is looking at the guinea pigs. Guinea pig Percy is drinking water and creating a little whirlpool like we saw earlier in the guinea pig water thing. And yesterday when I was rewatching this episode to take my notes, I googled hamster water thing because I was like, is there a specific name for it? I couldn't find a proper name for it, like just water bottle. I don't know. But you know, the ones where it's like, if you've ever had a hamster or guinea pig, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know why I wanted to look up the exact word, but I couldn't find one exact word for it. Anyways, I googled hamster water thing, and it just gave me a bunch of like shopping suggestions for where to buy water dispensers for your hamsters. It's not that I have a hamster. I have cats. Who cares? I'm so annoying. Anyways, maybe that's my fatal thought. I'm kidding. Anyways, guinea pig Percy is creating a whirlpool in the little water thing. And then Annabeth notices Riptide on Cece's desk in the little cup of pens. And she realizes that guinea pig Percy is guinea pig Percy. Then Cece asks Annabeth what's the matter because clearly she looks shaken up. And then she says, I'm worried that you're right, that this isn't going to work. She thinks she is more afraid of failing her mother than dying. Cece says she gets it. Her mother invented magic. And Annabeth says that she's only seen Athena a couple of times in her life. And she walks towards the guinea pig cage. She thought she was okay with that until she met Percy. His mom was always there for him. And while she's saying this, she's getting out the vitamins that we saw Hermes give Percy in episode 2, I believe, which make you feel like yourself again, which I did note when that happened because I was like, if you know, you know, and I knew, and here it is. So anyways, she wonders what that would be like, having a mom like Percy's who is always so present. It makes her angry sometimes, but what makes her even more angry is the thought of someone trying to take him away from her, Percy away from his mom. She throws the vitamins into the cage and Percy and the rest of the guinea pigs eat them. Cece yells, no, the cage explodes. A bunch of pirates and Percy are there where the cage once was. And Cece runs off, is like asking for help. The pirates yell, get her, get the witch. Okay, wicked. Ethan Slater did it better. Like, okay, balk. No, I'm kidding. Percy helps Annabeth up from the ground because she fell from the explosion. And then asks if she's okay. He gets the wax from Cece's desk. He saw where she kept it. One of the pirates hands Percy some greens. I think it's celery. It really doesn't matter. It says it's like Percy's a share and says much obliged, Percy. And he goes, Eddie? And he goes, call me Blackbeard. It was the guinea pig that had previously introduced himself as Edward. Then Percy and Annabeth are sailing off. Cece is watching them from her office. Percy opens up the wax and sees there's not much left, only enough for one. He gives it to Annabeth, says he'll take the mask. They're approaching the sirens, so she ties Percy up. And then Annabeth opens up the wax to start putting in her ears, but Cece, with her magic, wills it to fly back into her. And now Annabeth doesn't have wax. Percy's tied to the mast, and they're approaching the sirens. So Annabeth, she begins to hear the sirens. She starts walking towards them. Percy's yelling no. He's begging for her to cut her loose. He wants to save her, you know, at this point. Annabeth is walking towards the sirens. Then she's in like a vision, which is like a sewer type thing. That also happened to my good friend Lottie Matthews. A similar vision type thing where she was in like an underground sewer thing. Anyways, she's in like a sewer underground vision type thing. Percy, before she begins having this vision, he's yelling at her not to believe anything she sees or hears. And he's begging for her to cut him loose. But she's just entranced by the sirens now. She's in this sewer vision type thing. Grover, Luke, and Percy are there. Grover's singing, trying to get Luke and Percy to get along. We see Annabeth reach the sirens. It's like intercut, right? The vision with like what's actually happening. Percy is yelling after her. The vision of her with Grover and Luke and Percy is intercut with her walking towards the sirens. Percy manages to get Riptide out and cut himself loose. Annabeth attacks her friends in the vision. The sirens then are menacing her. Like she's seeing them as the sirens and they're menacing her and they're yelling at her. Then Athena comes down and slashes one of the sirens and says she's never seen anyone set a trap for the sirens before. Annabeth didn't know she was watching. She says she was always watching and she puts out her hand. And Annabeth grabs it, and then we see that it's actually the sirens. So it's like, this was so smart because the sirens first get her by thinking that she knows. She's like, no, this is not actually Percy, Luke, and Grover. Like, in this, she defeats them. And then what she actually wants, she sees her mother come down. She grabs Athena's hand, and we see that it's actually a siren grabbing her hand. Percy, meanwhile, has freed himself. He's there. He pulls Annabeth back. He's still tied to the ship, so they fall under the water. They are pulled back to the ship, and then they're on deck and past the sirens. Now, in the book, I saw a lot of people being upset specifically that there's a scene in the book where Percy is willing them back to the ship, and he creates like an air bubble around them. And the reason I think that change was good is because in the books, if I'm remembering correctly, they're not near, like, again, the CC thing, I'm fairly certain, is separate. And when this happens, it's like the sirens are like in an underground cave or something. So he's like, he has to float a much like farther distance. It wouldn't have made sense to create the air bubble in this instance for them when they're just like gonna, like, they're close enough to the ship, right? Like, Percy was far away. He had to like leave the ship and go far away from the ship to find Annabeth, if I'm remembering correctly. And he still had the wax in his ear, so he couldn't hear that. You know, it was different. So I think it was a smart thing not to include it, because it wouldn't have made a ton of sense in the way they decided to portray this. Anyways, Annabeth is sitting on the deck. Percy comes up from below deck, where he changed back into his regular clothes because he was in his toga the whole time that this was happening. Annabeth says, "We passed so many impossible trials. I thought, you know, beat the sirens, end the war, bring everyone together. And then my mother would, that's pride. That's hubris." And Percy says, "That's human. She wants her mom to notice her, and she should." And then Annabeth asks what Percy saw when he heard their song. Because again, Percy in the books has his ears plugged. In here, he doesn't. And he says he just saw her. He was so focused on her that she kind of saved him. She shielded him. And she says if he'd stayed at camp, she'd be Siren Chow. He definitely saved her. And he says maybe they both had to be there to get past the sirens. And he says, like, the one version of fate that doesn't suck. They laugh together. It's sweet. Like, these are the kind of, like, really sweet moments that I'm like, I love Persebeth. I mean, I always love them, but it's just like, oh, that's so beautiful. Then Percy gets a serious look on his face and he gets up. And Annabeth asks what, and he says 30, 31, 75, 12, we're here. And that's how the episode ends. And that's also the end of my coverage. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Next episode, hopefully, I anticipate being out sometime this weekend. It will be about the last two episodes of I Love LA. And then I'll be back next Tuesday/Wednesday for the next Percy Jackson episode. And then the week after that for the, you know, so that's my goal for now. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Like and subscribe, share with a friend, all that good stuff. Any feedback is welcome. But again, if it's about the quality, I'm working with what I have. So, but if you are an audio only listener, has the audio changed at all? Has it gotten worse or better since I started doing the video? Because it is a different platform that I'm recording on and then extracting the audio from. So if it's, the microphone's the same, but the platform is different. So if the audio has changed at all, specifically if it's gotten worse, please let me know. I don't know. So thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Another episode soon this week, and then I'll be back for a recap of episode 6 of Percy Jackson and the Olympians early next week before episode 7 drops. So thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Have a great week. All that good stuff. Bye.